Well, good morning. And as Debbie said in a run through the Bible story or the story of the Old Testament, we're going to think this morning about King David. David, who was described as a man after God's own heart. Let me quickly fill in the gap before we hear the story of how David was chosen. If you remember last time we left the people in the desert, we had a sermon on the book of Exodus. And there they were in the desert, receiving God's law and receiving God's presence in the tabernacle, but not yet in the land that God had promised them. And Moses, who'd led them out of their captivity in Egypt, hands over the leadership to Joshua. And Joshua leads the people during the time of their settlement in the land that God had promised to them. And you might think that all would then be well. There they were. They were God's people in God's land under God's blessing and authority. But sadly, that wasn't sufficient. They kept rejecting God's authority and turning away from him to worship other gods. And God left them to reap the natural consequences of their actions. So we get the period which we read about in the book of Judges, a period where the people turn away from God, they're oppressed by the surrounding nations, things get worse and worse, and eventually they turn back to God and cry out to him, and he sends them a leader, and they defeat their enemies, and things are okay for a while, but then they turn away again and go through the same cycle time after time. And despite great leaders like Barak and Gideon, there seems to be a downward spiral. And the book of Judges, records these events and ends with this plaintive verse. In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit. They were a people without any authority over them, doing as they saw fit, incapable of staying faithful to God. And the last of these judges was Samuel. And the people came to Samuel and said, "We want a king." And at first sight, that seems a reasonable request. But what they asked for was a king like the ones that they saw in the nations around them, not a king under God's authority. They say to Samuel, "Now appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations have." And Samuel was reluctant. I think he sensed that this was not going to go well. But God said to him, "Listen to all the people are saying to you. It is not you they have rejected, but they have rejected me as their king." So Samuel anoints a king, King Saul, and he makes a promising start, but he too turns away from God. So God tells Samuel, "I've rejected Saul as king, and I want you to go and anoint another king, one of the sons of Jesse who lives in Bethlehem." Now that must have filled Samuel with horror. He had a fair amount of authority, but he knew that if Saul found out that he was helping to appoint a rival king, he would be for the chop, quite literally, I think. So he arranges to go to Bethlehem to offer a sacrifice there, hoping that Saul won't be suspicious. And Julia and Louis are going to read the story to us.
1 Samuel chapter 16.
The Lord said to Samuel,
"How long will you mourn for Saul, since I have rejected him as king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and be on your way. I am sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem. I have chosen one of his sons to be king."
But Samuel said, "How can I go? If Saul hears about it, he will kill me." The Lord said,
"Take a heifer with you and say, 'I've come to sacrifice to the Lord.' Invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what to do. You are to anoint me the one I for me the one I indicate."
Samuel did what the Lord said. When he arrived at Bethlehem, the elders of the town trembled when they met him. They asked, "Do you come in peace?" Samuel replied, "Yes, in peace. I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves and come to the sacrifice with me." Then he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. When they arrived, Samuel saw Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord." But the Lord said to Samuel,
"Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart.
Then Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass in front of Samuel. But Samuel said, "The Lord has not chosen this one either." Jesse then made Shammah pass by. But Samuel said, "Nor has the Lord chosen this one." Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel. But Samuel said to him, "The Lord has not chosen these." So he asked Jesse, "Are these all the sons you have?" "There is the youngest," Jesse answered. "He is tending the sheep." Samuel said, "Send for him. We will not sit down until he arrives." So he sent for him and had him brought in. He was glowing with health and had a fine appearance and handsome features. Then the Lord said,
"Rise and anoint him. This is the one."
So Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David. Samuel then went to Ramah.
Thank you, Julia and Louis. Simon will be talking later in the service about what it means to be a man after God's own heart. But I want to spend a few minutes looking at these verses, the verses that were just read to us, and asking what they tell us about David and what they tell us about God and what we can take from them to apply to ourselves. So first of all, what do they tell us about David? Well, there's the obvious things. He was young, he was healthy, he was handsome, he looked after the sheep. But I think we can also read a bit between the lines. Now, having eight sons must have made life a bit difficult for Jesse and his wife. But is that really a good enough excuse for completely forgetting about the youngest? And isn't it a little bit strange that a prominent and probably wealthy member of the town should send his own son out to be a shepherd rather than a servant? Well, we can't know for certain, but there are clues here and in other places in the Bible that David didn't really enjoy a happy childhood. He was a lot younger than some of his elder brothers and sisters. And later in life, in one of the Psalms ascribed to David, he was to write this: "I am a foreigner to my own family, a stranger to my own mother's children." He was certainly a very complex character with huge gifts and abilities, but also, I think, plenty of psychological baggage. And God was going to use all of this to God's glory. What do these verses tell us about God? Well, David wouldn't have been our choice, I'm sure. He wouldn't have been Samuel's choice if God hadn't been prompting him. Samuel would have chosen the eldest son, Eliab. In fact, when he sees him, he says, "Surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord." But God says, "Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." Now, when we talk about the heart, we're normally referring to emotions, feelings, slightly fluffy things which come and go. But in the book which we're following to take us through the Old Testament, Christopher Wright explains that in the Hebrew language in which it was written, the heart was seen rather differently. It was seen as the seat of the will, the seat of our decisions. And God could see that David had the will to continue to seek him and try to follow him through all ups and downs of life. And there were going to be plenty of ups and downs in David's life. God is not fooled by outward appearances, but looks deep within. He looks at our own heart, at our will. But what are the implications for us? I've only got time this morning to briefly mention three. The first one is this: we won't please God by putting on an impressive outward appearance, by pretending to be something that we're not. We may be able to fool others for a while, but we won't fool God, because God doesn't look at the outward appearance, he looks at the heart. One of the blessings of this springtime has been that we've had a gold cress or a pair of gold cress in their garden. Lovely little bird. I'd never heard of one till a couple of months ago. They're the smallest bird in Europe. Lovely little bird. But he is incredibly vain. He spends a lot of time just outside our window, sometimes flapping his wings to jump up and down so he can see the whole of himself. He's incredibly vain. And if we're not careful, we can be very similar. Maybe we're vain about our outward appearance, but perhaps in more subtle ways. We love to give the impression that we're clever or knowledgeable or we've got our life sorted. But God looks at the heart and we need to be honest with him. So that's the first thing. We won't please God by putting on an impressive outward appearance. Secondly, we're created in the image of God and we're called to be like him. Paul writes in Ephesians, be imitators of God. If God doesn't judge people by their outward appearance, then neither should we. We know that's true, but it's so easy to jump to conclusions about people because of their racial or social background or their education or where they live or what they do to earn a living or what they wear or how they speak. And I'm still learning that lesson, but let me share one of the lessons that God taught me many years ago. I was in Snowdonia shortly after, well, I must have been in my early 20s, I guess, in Snowdonia doing some walking with a couple of friends. And in the evening, we went down to the pub for a drink and we took a chess set with us because one of my friends was keen on chess. So he and I played a couple of games of chess. And in the pub, sitting in the corner on his own, was a youngster, not very well dressed. But after we'd played a couple of times, he came over and said, oh, could I have a game with you? He was a local lad, worked in one of the slate quarries in Snowdonia. Well, I just graduated from Cambridge University, and I thought to myself, well, this should be easy. But it wasn't. In fact, he was very good, beat me. Not only was he good at chess, but he used to spend some of his time writing poetry. See, I judge by outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And thirdly, we should be careful about comparing ourselves with others. It's so easy to get depressed by comparing ourselves with others and thinking, I wish I could be clever like them, or I wish I was more popular like so-and-so. Look at all the friends they have. Or I wish I could be more articulate like that person instead of stumbling over words. Or I wish I could be more attractive like her, or more athletic like him, or more socially skilled like them. And I suspect that the young shepherd boy David felt the same way when he looked at his older brothers who were fighting in Saul's army. But God looks at the heart, not at these outward things. And there's no need for ourselves to compare ourselves with others. One of Shakespeare's sonnets expresses this brilliantly. So if the technology works, we're going to try and listen to it.
When in disgrace with fortune and men's eyes, I all alone beweep my outcast state, and trouble deaf heaven with my bootless cries, and look upon myself and curse my fate, wishing me like to one more rich in hope, featured like him with friends possessed, desiring this man's art and that man's scope, with what I most enjoy, contented least. Yet in these thoughts, myself almost despising, haply I think on thee. And then my state, like to the lark at break of day arising from sullen earth, sings hymns at heaven's gate. For thy sweet love remembered such wealth brings, that then I scorn to change my state with kings. When
What lifted Shakespeare out of his depression, what made him feel like the lark ascending, was thinking about the love he shared with another human being. But we know that human love is a changeable and imperfect thing. If we're followers of Jesus, we have a much more certain love that we can rely on. A perfect love, the love of God for us. A love that loves us as we are. A love that will never give up on us. God looks into our heart, and yet he still loves us. And he's demonstrated that. He's demonstrated the depth of that love by dying a cruel and shameful death for us. The Apostle Paul describes God's love in these words, "But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us." God looks into our heart, and he still loves us. And therefore, we don't need to measure ourselves against others or make comparisons with other people.